Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi. Last week, I told you all a little bit about my experience working as a coach for Beyond Booksmart, and it made me want to share something else fun. I recently completed training as a parent and teacher trainer for BrainTracks, which is the school division of Beyond Booksmart. In case you don't know about it, BrainTracks works with schools to help teachers learn how to teach executive function skills in the classroom. What excites me about this new trainer position is that it helps democratize access to executive function education. We adapt the same strategies that we use in our one-to-one coaching for classroom use, making it accessible to more students. This empowers teachers and parents to be more effective, and students gain tools and strategies that strengthen their executive functioning, and everybody gets a nice confidence boost. Studies show that strong EF skills improve academic performance, so it's fantastic that we get to help educators teach these skills to their entire classroom. We have a podcast episode about this topic. It's episode 22, so check that out, or feel free to reach out to me if you want to learn more. Today's episode is all about obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I met up with Dr. Tony Bram, a clinical psychologist in Lexington, Massachusetts, to learn more about this fascinating brain-based condition. Dr. Bram works with adults and kids, providing support for a wide range of mental health challenges, including OCD, anxiety, depression, and learning differences. He explained to me that he became interested in helping people with OCD during his pre-doctoral internship. He realized that the traditional kinds of psychotherapy that he had been learning were not so effective in alleviating the distressing symptoms of his patients with OCD, and this led him to discover a special form of cognitive behavioral therapy called exposure with response prevention, and it's ERP for short. Dr. Bram continued to learn more during his postdoctoral work at the Menninger Clinic, which was in Topeka, Kansas at the time. And there, while primarily pursuing advanced training in traditional modalities of treatment and assessment, he also sought the supervision of a cognitive behavioral therapist who specialized in OCD so he could begin learning and applying ERP and other CBT techniques. This experience taught him the importance of being flexible and expanding his therapeutic skills to better meet the diverse needs of his clients. I am so happy to bring Dr. Bram on so we can all learn about OCD, its connection to executive functioning, and how to support people in our lives who may be struggling with it and its related challenges. Okay, now on to the show. Hi, Tony. Thanks so much for joining me on Focus Forward. I'm super excited to have you here today to talk about OCD and the connection with executive function. Could you introduce yourself to our listeners and explain maybe a little bit about how you got into working with people who have OCD?
Yeah. Thanks, Hannah. I'm Dr. Tony Bram. I'm a clinical psychologist in Lexington, Massachusetts. I work with adults and kids and do a lot of different things in my practice, both in terms of psychotherapy and assessment, psychological testing. My training is more traditional in my work with adults and kids. Mostly I work to help people get sort of more in touch with their experience, their internal experience, their experience of relationships, and help them understand something about why they might be suffering and to figure out a path forward.
So could you explain a little bit about OCD for our listeners who maybe don't know what that is or might have an assumption about what it is? I know I was surprised when we talked before and I learned so much more about it that I didn't know.
Yeah. OCD is understood to be a neurobiologically based anxiety-related condition that has a pretty strong genetic component. There's a vulnerability for it to be inherited. We know more about how to treat OCD than we know what causes it. So it's probably better for us to know more how to help people with it, but there's still lots of research yet to be done on the cause of it. When we talk about OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, there's two components. There's obsessions and there are compulsions. Obsessions are intrusive, unwanted thoughts or images that get stuck in one's mind and brain, and it's associated with anxiety increasing. The thoughts that, and we'll talk a little bit more in a bit about the types of thoughts that can get stuck. I'd want to sort of preface what I'll say a little bit later by saying that the thoughts that are OCD thoughts or obsessions could be something that any of us could think about at any time, with or without OCD. But the hallmark is the stuckness. They're adhesive. They're hard to get rid of. You know, for some people without OCD, for people without OCD, the thoughts kind of pass through. And for somebody with OCD, the thoughts get stuck. Okay, so those are obsessions. Compulsions are mental or behavioral rituals that are aimed at neutralizing the obsessions, making them go away, and reducing anxiety. It's important to know that people with OCD usually don't act on their obsessions. I'll explain that more in a little bit too. So, obsessions, again, are the thoughts or images that get stuck, and compulsions are the mental or behavioral rituals that people do to try to get rid of the thoughts. These can take, this is probably what was most surprising to you, Hannah, is that they, that oh, obsessions and compulsions can come in many flavors. The classic example is that of somebody who has contamination fears. They worry they've come in contact or will come up, come in contact with germs. So the obsession is the worries around, I'm going to be contaminated or get sick. Okay. That thought is associated with rising anxiety. And the best and most immediate solution to that is a compulsion, which is hand washing, which is to, you know, immediately relieve it. And one of the problems or main problem with obsessions and compulsions and how they get you sort of stuck together is that the person learns that the only way I can get rid of this worry about contamination is by washing immediately. And it usually does relieve the obsession and the anxiety in the short term,
In
but
the
the
short
problem is
term,
that it comes right back. The person has no other experience over time of what helps the anxiety come down other than washing. So it can take, so obsessions can come in many flavors. They're not only contamination, but people can worry about being aggressive, you know, toward themselves or other people. They can have unwanted sexual thoughts, thoughts that feel perverse or forbidden. Those are very difficult because they're also associated with a lot of shame. So it's on those that I want to emphasize that people with those kinds of concerns that have no history of acting out aggressively toward other people or sexually toward other people are very unlikely, if not completely unlikely, to ever act on those. But the thoughts are very compelling and they get stuck. So there can be a lot of shame. Other types of obsessions are about superstitious thoughts that unless I do this or that, something bad's going to happen. Obsessions can also revolve around getting sick, having major health problems, cancer, AIDS, things like that. People can have intrusive thoughts about their sexuality or gender identity, and that can get very complicated today. People who are straight will have intrusive thoughts that they might be gay. People who are gay might have intrusive thoughts if they're really straight. Increasingly, there are people that have intrusive thoughts about being transgender when they're not. So this can be very sensitive to try to tease out to what extent OCD is at play. There are other types of obsessions about religion and being punished by God, things like that. Importantly, for our discussion of executive functioning, obsessions and compulsions revolve around perfectionism, things needing to be just so or complete. People can get stuck on that and end up performing a lot of compulsions around checking, redoing, and then avoiding as a way to not have to get into cycles of obsessing and.
I hear people kind of toss around the word like, oh, I have OCD about something, or I have OCD about something else. So, but I don't know if they really mean that, or if it's something that they are just really, that they feel really strongly about. Like maybe they just like really like to keep their counters in their kitchen clean, or they like, I've heard people feel like they have to count when they go upstairs or something like that. At what point does it become true OCD? Is that when it like impacts you in different areas,
That's
or
exactly right. So you have
okay.
to have, obsessions and compulsions documented over a period of time.
Yeah.
And the key is for any sort of formal psychiatric condition to be diagnosed, it's got to cause some significant impairment in work or school or interpersonal functioning. So if it is getting in the way of relationships, if it's, you're not getting your work done at school, you're failing out of school, you're not performing up to your level, you're not getting your assignments done at work, then it sort of enters the realm. The other thing I should say about when people use the word OCD or they have an obsession about that, an obsession also in this sense is not something that somebody's super enthusiastic about.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. So something that you said earlier, which I feel like it's really important for the listeners to hear, is when you talked about the shame that is associated with those feelings, and how it's really important for people to know that it's not, like we don't know what causes it, right? But it's not your fault. It's not something that people should feel bad about.
Yeah, it's nobody's fault. It's not the person's with its fault. It's not the parents' fault. Yeah, it's and one of the things that's important in the treatment of it that's very different from the more traditional type of therapy where we're always sort of looking for meaning in one's internal experience. The treatment OCD, we really want to de-emphasize the symptoms having much
Any
meaning.
meaning? Oh,
You
yeah,
know,
that's
if
interesting.
somebody's having intrusive thoughts about doing something aggressive to a pet or to a family member, rather than digging and trying to understand why their underlying feelings are this way, we think about these obsessions, the OCD thoughts, as like hiccups that don't really mean anything, or junk mail,
Don't give them any power.
or spam. It's like, if you kind of to get the person to explore or take these thoughts seriously, it's like clicking on a spam link. It's
Yeah,
a bunch of
interesting.
nonsense that you can get kind of
Yeah,
caught up in and you pay a price for.
yeah, that's such a good analogy. So how prevalent is OCD in the war in the population?
Yeah, much more than we ever thought, many years ago. It was thought to be a rare thing. Right now, about 1 in 200 kids and 1 in 100 adults. So that implies that there's what's called a bimodal onset, meaning basically that there are two periods where people are likely to experience the onset. The childhood onset is roughly around age 11, but it can be younger. And the adult onset is in the ballpark of 19 to 23. So you have more adults with it because you have the people that have the onset as adults, and it also adds
Yes,
ones
to the children.
that would began as had their first symptoms as kids.
And then I remember when I spoke with Roberto Olavardia, he said there's a lot of comorbid diagnosis of ADHD and other diagnoses, but that OCD is one of them. Can you talk a little bit
Yes,
about
it
that?
is. Yeah, just briefly, that among patients with OCD, and I think these are out of adults, among patients with OCD, close to 12% have a diagnosis of ADHD. And among patients with ADHD, who are, I believe, adults, or I'm not sure whether this is adults or kids actually, but the rate of OCD among patients with ADHD was about 25%. So very high overlap, co-occurrence of the symptom constellation. Also of interest, I referenced the autism spectrum before. That there's some research suggesting that about 25% of young people with OCD also had a diagnosis of the autism spectrum. And about 17% of people with autism spectrum met criteria for OCD.
So as coaches, I mean, we work with a lot of people. I mean, many of our clients have ADHD, and many of them may also have a comorbid diagnosis of OCD. So as a coach or as any kind of practitioner, anyone or a teacher, anybody who works with students, or young people, what are some clues that we can look for that might indicate an undiagnosed OCD
Yeah,
presence?
it's a good question, Hannah. All the things I'm going to mention are clues, I should underscore, to the possibility of OCD. None of these are diagnostic in and of themselves, and each can have multiple causes, which may or may not include OCD. But these are the types of some of the things I'm going to describe are things that I hear when somebody comes to see me or a parent calls about a child that make me want to systematically rule OCD in or out. So here are some things. Patterns of perfectionism and procrastination and avoidance as a solution. Procrastination is a solution to sidestep what can be an arduous and time-consuming cycle of trying to get things just so or complete, and compulsions that involve checking, redoing, and rewriting. So when people actually engage this process, it takes a lot of time and it's a lot of anguish. So a solution often is that people will say, not consciously, but like, put it off. I don't want to
I don't want to
deal
do
with it.
that.
So that type of procrastination avoidance around some sort of perfectionistic needs, is the first thing that I would highlight that you probably see often. As other sort of clues, or some of these are overlapping, but slowness, inefficiency, and completion of or handing in of tasks and assignments.
I've seen that where people will do the work and but then not turn it in.
So there are a couple of possible causes for that, but some of them is fearing I left something out, it's complete, which would have an OCD feel. It can also, and not necessarily mutually exclusive, there can be a social anxiety component too, where it's a function of fear of negative evaluation, which is, and so again, it could be either or both. But the fear that it's not quite right, it's not perfect, it can always be better. The thing about OCD that I mentioned before, in terms of obsessions, is that OCD kind of demands 100% certainty, like that it's complete, that it's perfect, that nothing bad will happen, etc. And so it can never be satisfied.
Never.
So sometimes the solution is to just not hand it in.
Yeah.
you know, as a compromise, so one can never find out that it was not perfect.
Right. Yeah. Temporary solution causes problems later.
Yeah. Other possible clues are excruciatingly painful difficulties in making choices. So if you're working with somebody who's has a paper to write for an English class or a history class, and there's a choice of topics, people can get stuck. Choose what topic should I choose? I mean, in a more on a more daily basis, people can have difficulty ordering off a menu. So, avoidance of other sort of more mundane sort of written tasks like writing and sending emails and texts.
Yeah. Combined with just not having a lot of experience doing it, I imagine that it makes it even more difficult. A lot of my college students that I work with, I wouldn't say that I would refer them for OCD testing, but we do a lot of that, like let's work on sending emails together because they just don't have a lot of experience. So if you combine that with that perfectionistic, the fear of not being perfect, that must be
So
really
the
painful.
emails and texts, there can also be that social anxiety
Yeah,
component, and
right.
sometimes that can drive it more. But you can see people, laboring over every word. Is this the right word? This sentence doesn't look right. And then doing a lot of cutting and just deleting of things and having to start over again has that kind of flavor that you'd start to think, well, could this be going on? Not that it is going on, but could this be a possible explanation? Other clues are the need to ask the same question over and over again, and repeated requests for reassurance. Sure, this looks okay? You sure I can hand it in? So reassurance seeking is a kind of compulsion that can sometimes bring in parents, and teachers and things like that. If people are writing by hand, retracing letters or numbers, excessive erasing, and to start over with writing or drawing. Those are some other things that you can, tune into. This is an incomplete list, but it gives you a sense of some of the things that might,
Yeah, and what's so
that would.
interesting, like if I think about even myself, I think, gosh, I mean, I've been in situations where I have, been afraid of, I don't know, like as a person with ADHD, I tend to share too much. So then I, like if I'm writing an email, I'll go back and, try to make sure that I'm not share oversharing. And so I can see how it might evolve over time into some kind of obsession if you don't ever get over that fear and just send it and realize it's okay. It all worked out okay.
So we can talk in a bit about things that, once OCD is diagnosed and it's been explained to the person and the family, about how you work with it. But some of the things that you would do as a coach or that I would do as a therapist would be to get people to do something in the face of their to face their obsession and not perform the compulsion. So to write an email that might have intentional mistakes in it and not check it over at all and hit send, and which allows an opportunity for learning that they'll send the email and it's not gonna, it's not gonna shatter their world, and that they can survive it. But the idea is that by going back and checking, redoing, having it take so long, that's effort to, guard against something horrible happening. But the only thing the person learns is that this is what I have to do to keep myself safe. But it's really not necessary.
So how does OCD impact executive functioning and academics and productivity? I mean, I work with mostly college students, so I can see how it would impact their productivity. But how does it impact adults or kids?
It's a good, another really important question. So I referenced before this brain-based, and I think Hannah, I think I said you said for your listeners, you'll have posted a link that shows an image on one side of a person in a brain scanner who does not have OCD, and the other side there's a person with OCD, and the type of scanner this is goes beyond a normal X-ray that just shows brain structure, but it's colorized, and the different colors, depict the brain activity. So there's neurons firing, there's active areas of the brain. And so if your listeners look at those pictures and compare, each of the people are in these scanners, they're not doing anything, they're just laying in these scanners. And the person with OCD has activity in all kinds
It's
of
crazy. Yeah. You
areas
guys,
of the
you
brain.
listeners, you got to check it out. I saw the picture and I went, I couldn't believe it.
Among other areas, what stands out is that those frontal areas of the brain that are the sort of center for executive functioning, the prefrontal cortex, are way overactive, with a person at rest. So this kind of gives a sense of just all the sort of unnecessary noise and activity, neural noise going on that impacts and distracts. How do you focus on what's out there, what the task at hand is when there's all this other noise going on?
Just looking at that picture really helped me understand why someone would resort to doing a compulsion to relieve that. Like, somehow, please help me shut my brain down so I could. It really helped me understand, like, what was going on inside. It's amazing.
So with all that going on, it's really hard to focus. So whether the person also meets criteria for a primary attentional problem, ADHD or not, OCD is going to impact the capacity
For
to
sure.
attend. So all of this, affects attention, affects the efficiency of processing and output. So I mentioned attention, difficulty regulating attention, that is focusing on what is most salient because there's distraction from all those internal stuff. So inefficient output related to, as I mentioned before, completing homework or assignments. Again, this, committing to a decision. Sometimes it can manifest an executive function coach might see excessive but unproductive research going online. This can manifest also with regard to trying to order some sort of a product. Person does endless research online and compares prices and all kinds of things. But it's very inefficient because they takes them ages to get around to
They
actually
never buy
doing.
the thing.
This can also be the case for obsessions about health. Somebody goes and researches their
Ooh,
symptoms
Dr.
over
Google,
and
never a
over
good
again.
idea.
It can impact the one's ability to evaluate the quality of their work. What's good enough, what's acceptable to turn in. This idea that has to be, as I mentioned before, perfect, complete. That's part of an executive functioning is being able to self-monitor, self-assess. Slowness in reading and written output. This would be not explained by a specific learning disability. A sense of, I didn't quite get it all. I need to go back. Deciding what to write and organizing and prioritizing. These are all aspects of executive functioning. Problems with time management, that's part of executive functioning. Somebody that's habitually late can be difficulty, knowing when it's good enough to
Mm.
finish what they're doing. They can't shift until they feel it's complete or just so.
Right. I'm actually even thinking about myself. I was trying to find a backpack to wear to get. We're going on a vacation, and I was trying to find like the perfect backpack. And then I was like, Hannah, what are you doing? Just order a backpack. It's gonna be fine. So I just like picked the first backpack
Yeah, and that's the kind of strategy that we would recommend.
I saw. Yeah, like just get a backpack. Yeah, just send the email.
Yeah, but it's hard. It really is. When somebody truly has OCD, it's like you can be humorous about it and catch yourself. But someone with OCD could do the same, but gets really stuck. I just can't do this.
I just can't do it.
Because it would lead to such a feeling of unease and stress.
I imagine a lot of scaffolding is helpful. Maybe like finding super low stakes opportunities to test these strategies out and see. Yeah, I remember I was reading a book called It's About Time, which is about the different styles of procrastinators. And she was saying in the perfectionism procrastination section, she said, like, try making your bed not very well. Which I thought, oh, that's actually a good example. Like, no one's going to see your bed, just you, maybe your partner. So I thought that, so that kind of made me think of this same idea.
That's the precise spirit of what we're trying to do, is to tolerate good enough and to be able to sit with the anxiety about it.
And I feel like that's a that is as a coach, I mean, I pretty much do that for all of my clients. Like, hey, we're going to try something new. Let's try it in a session. Let's or maybe we like at Beyond Booksmart, we use this I do, we do, you do approach. So like I'll do the thing first and show you how it works, and then we can do it together, and then you can try it on your own. So I imagine that that scaffolding for parents or for any therapist or coach that's listening, I imagine that that is super helpful. Speaking of parents and therapists and coaches, I mean, there's a lot of collaboration that needs to go on, I'm sure, when you're treating a patient with OCD and helping them work through it and find some freedom from it. What do you recommend for people who are listening to kind of manage all that?
Well, collaboration, teamwork are essential. I'm going to back up just add one little piece. To be able to do the kind of work that we're talking about, you need to really clarify what the role is of OCD in a person's client's difficulties with executive functioning or anything else that you're helping with as a coach. So you'd want to refer to a licensed mental health professional, or they may already have one on board. But you'd want to seek somebody that has some kind of expertise and specialty in diagnosing and treating OCD. There are a lot of people here in the Boston area. In other parts of the country, it still may be a bit more difficult to find. And we're gonna you're gonna put link to a find a resources directory that would be very helpful. But you want to sort of nail down whether this is actually OCD and whether the, seeking a course of treatment and support for it and integrating the skills into executive function and coaching makes sense for that person. But basically, so coach, once the diagnosis is established, there needs to be sort of a team that includes the client, the family, if it's a child, parents, the coach, and the mental health person. And everybody gets sort of on the same page and understanding the role of OCD and contributing to whatever the academic or executive functioning challenge is. And clarify channels of communication, who's going to be in touch with who, making sure the boundaries between the mental health professional and the coach are clear. It's not the coach's job to do the therapy, but in collaboration with the therapist, there are can be skills that are sort of imported that can be applied in the coaching setting.
Yeah, and that I guess and that's such a good example of how open conversation is so important when you're dealing with any kind of diagnosis, because nobody knows everything and nobody does everything. So it when there is that collaborative approach to supporting someone, that communication is just so critical.
Yeah, and add to that, if it's a child or adolescent, the collaborative team will also need to involve the school.
Yeah, right.
Often, not always, but quite often in the form of an individual education plan, an IEP or a 504 plan, there are many accommodations that are possible for people that are that have OCD that where assignments take them painstaking amount of time. There's accommodations potentially of reducing the length of assignment, having people just do odd or even numbers. So reducing the length of assignment, putting the focus more on mastery than volume of items. Sometimes not extending deadlines.
I was going to ask about that.
Because
That was
that
my
can
next
sometimes
question.
be, there can sometimes ne there sometimes needs to be a balance, especially as someone has just been diagnosed and they're just learning that it can be difficult for them to hand things in. So they r we really don't want them to be penalized for their disability. At the same time, a strategy over time that involves extended deadlines can kind of be colluding with the OCD, that you can have more time to get this more perfect. So, but there needs to be sensitivity on the part of the team, the team members who are at school to this. So the person is, supported and not punished for their disability.
Right. And also so that the person with OCD feels comfortable saying, like, this is how it challenges me. I don't think that strategy will work. Or,
Right.
I do think this other one will. So can we just revisit for just a few minutes? I'm just so curious, as coaches, what are some other strategies? Because perfectionism comes up a lot. I mean, so many of the blog posts I've written or the webinars we've hosted, we've talked about perfectionism or procrastination, which is often associated with or caused by perfectionism. Are there any like other tips or strategies that you have that you can suggest? I mean, I know we've covered some of them, but I'm kind of dying for more because it comes up so often.
So, again, with the caveat that these particular strategies ought to be sort of, determined in collaboration
Yes.
with a mental health professional. But some examples of things are scheduling time for avoided tasks, along with creating some sense of accountability with the coach. So, I'm gonna, work on this at, 3 o'clock this afternoon after our appointment, and I'm gonna give it, 15 minutes to compose this email, and get it off, and then I will either as the student email you as the coach to let you know that I did it, or if I'm having trouble with it. So there's accountability. Or, you can make an agreement to suggest that you'll reach out to them at such and such a time just to hear about how they do, with, and letting them know that you appreciate them being honest with you. And if it turns out they had trouble doing it, it's important data that we'll use to sort of figure out what will work better in the future.
Yes, they shouldn't feel bad about it.
Yeah, and they will feel bad about it, but you don't want to pile on, and just let them know that it's a work in progress. So along with appointing a time, implementing some sort of time limit, like setting the timer. And the other thing is to related to that is to have them anticipate their anxiety, their unease, their distress, but the task is to sit with it and come out the other
Tolerate
end.
it. Yeah, because if you never give yourself the opportunity to discover that you can tolerate it, then you just make up these stories in your head that you can't. And we believe those stories.
You have to keep redoing something over and over again. The experience is that I can't sit with this, it's too much. But the reality is that we can actually handle quite a bit. And it's important for us to sort of convince our brains and our minds that we can. That it okay. So another thing to, and a lot of these sort of tips are overlapping, reframing the outcome goal as good enough rather than perfect. And that is something that needs to be returned to. Take the example of making an imperfect bed or sending an email with a mistaken, grammar or spelling. I had somebody recently, write me emails with my name spelled incorrectly. So assigning tasks to be purposefully imperfect, like I said, sending texts or emails with intentional spelling and grammatical errors. R For people that are perfectionist about their reading and read slowly, doing some reading exercises where they have to read something relatively quickly and tell you one or two things about the paragraph. Ra So the idea is getting putting the emphasis on getting the gist rather than completeness.
I find that a lot of my students believe that they have to completely read everything from front to back, every single word. And so a lot of it is teaching people, no, you don't have to do that. That's torture.
And here it would be to purposefully not do that, to
Make the
read
choice not
just
to.
tell you something that they got out of it
Yeah, I
and
love
then
that.
move on.
Yeah, cool.
Another thing has to do with making decisions. So this, like I said before, it could have to do with choosing a topic. So if you so flipping a coin using a random number generator and committing to stick with whatever they decide, and then giving them then some sort of time limit to act on the decision.
Great. So, I know we're just about running out of time here. I'm going to put a lot of resources in the show notes. So please, listeners, check all those out. Tony gave me a lot of really great ones. And also, if someone is curious if they might want to pursue getting diagnosed or if their child may need to, you might look into it for your child. Do you have any just quick recommendations for that?
Yeah, I've given you a link that you'll post to the International OCD Foundation. They've got tons of good resources
Great.
online. They have a find resources page where you can look for therapists or clinics, prescribers, support groups. So there's all kinds of supports
Great.
that's probably the best place. If you have tips of other referrals that you've learned from other people, you just want to clarify parents or clients directly reaching out to people. Find out whether they have expertise in specific treatments for OCD, because not all of us do in the field. People have different specialties, and
Yeah, and don't be uncomfortable asking.
yeah, it's okay to ask what their experience is and what their training is, and whether whether they do OCD specific treatment, because it really is a specialty. Just a few things about before we wrap up about the interventions for if OCD is diagnosed. There, so that a therapy would involve a specific type of cognitive behavior therapy, C or CBT, that involves components of psychoeducation, kind of like we talked about it. We got a little handle on here today, how to understand OCD. Part of the treatment, especially with kids but also with other patients, there's a process of trying to externalize the OCD to not equate the OCD with oneself,
Oh,
but to
yeah.
think about something, the OCD, as something that tries to control you, like a bully or a monster. And the
Interesting.
idea is creating a narrative where we kind of
Yeah.
push back or
Yeah,
boss
fight
it back.
that. Yeah.
Then often a core of the treatment is something called exposure with response prevention, ERP. And what one does is with the therapist, this creates a hierarchy or a rank ordered list of situations that evoke situations or obsessions themselves that evoke distress, and rank ordering them from least to most scary. And so then this list is sort of a roadmap to exercises called exposures that are done to sort of face the situation that one fears. And they're done systematically, starting with things that are more manageable and building up to things that are more scary. So the coach, in working with collaborating with a therapist, ought to sort of make sure that what they're wanting to do is in line with the hierarchy. That is the person's readiness to, writing an email to a professor might be much more anxiety provoking than writing an email to a friend. So you might start being imperfect in writing to a friend. And then there's another sort of body of interventions that many cognitive behavior therapists are using now called acceptance techniques, that puts the focus on anticipating and tolerating sitting with the obsession and the anxiety, and the idea that obsessions are thoughts that will pass.
Yeah, that's not a real thing.
So that's a very sort of quick thumbnail of what might go into a therapy. Medication can also help. So oftentimes in research suggests that the best outcomes are when there's a combined therapy and medication. So medication consult with a psychiatrist or psychiatric nurse practitioner is something that, and that's something that can offer more immediate relief, especially if the symptoms are really debilitating. And then the last component we touched on before is school-related advocacy. So it's really affecting the student's performance in school, or their experience of homework outside of school, or affects them in other ways. There is a case to be made for advocating for a formal IEP or a minimum 504 plan that takes the OCD into account, and the school can also benefit from collaboration consultation with the mental health professional and the coach to try to provide the scaffolding necessary.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much for sharing all that information. It's really interesting, and there's so many useful kind of clarifications and explanations in there. So thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen. My takeaways from this conversation are that many of the strategies used for helping people with an OCD diagnosis are also helpful for any time you may be struggling with perfectionism. It was super interesting to learn about the connection between OCD and the activity in the prefrontal cortex. The OCD brain is a busy place, so finding strategies that relieve some of that mental activity is key. And most importantly, I learned that there is a way to manage OCD with the support of a good team. So please reach out or check the show notes if you need help finding someone to help you get a diagnosis and manage your OCD symptoms. Listening to this podcast is a great place to start, and finding help from a trained professional is the next important step. As always, if you have questions or topic suggestions, you can reach out to me at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn. And it helps us out a ton if you can rate us on Apple or Spotify. And even better, if you have a sec, leave us a written review on Apple. That way more people can find us. You can follow and even set up auto downloads of Focus Forward on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Sign up for our subscriber email at beyondbooksmart.com/podcast.
Our producer and editor is Sean Potts, and our content marketer is Justice Abbott. And many, many thanks to Dr. Tony Bram for joining me for this interesting and helpful conversation. Thanks for listening.